couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, you are. And you should be proud of yourself for doing so.
Yes, the show that has everything if you're into what's coming out this weekend.
All two movies.
So everything related to movies that are coming out this coming weekend. Which this week is, as Kevin just mentioned, too, we have a remake of a foreign language film.
Yes.
And then we have a movie with a curse word in the title. So I'm not even sure if I can say it.
Yeah. I had some awkward times in some radio interviews this week where they wouldn't let me say the title, which is really hard. It reminds me of when they released Inglourious Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple radio stations that were like, well, you can't say that. I'm like, they didn't spell it right.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, how can you really then even talk about a movie like Kick Butt?
Kick Ass. Just say it.
How can you really even talk about Kick Ass then if you can't say the title? Mm-hmm. How are people going to remember what the heck you're talking about when you're like, oh, no, this movie's really awesome. You should go see it, but I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah, well, and exactly. So. And also, it's one of those things. The word is in the Bible. Well, not with the word kick in front of it. You know.
Well, and I guess, you know, Kick Ass is pretty safe. I mean, it's not something else that I could say, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's there's worse out there.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we're not going to say Kick Patootie or anything like that.
Right. Anyway, but we're going to review Kick Ass. We're going to say the word Kick Ass. I'm going to say the word Kick Ass like 47 times.
Awesome.
In the next segment. Not this segment, because we're not doing that movie here, but in the next segment I'm going to say it as much as possible because this is like my one time to get away with it.
There's a lot worse words in the movie. Let's just say that.
Oh, definitely. Like fart.
Yes.
Anyway,
thanks for bringing
here's,
that one up.
Here's how you can get a hold of Fat Guys of the Movies when you're not busy with other things. You can go to fatguysofthemovies.com. You can go over to iTunes. And you can subscribe to us, download us. Not us, but the show.
Wouldn't that be awesome if they could just download us right into the computer?
I don't think so. I think I know one person in this world who would probably do that.
That'd probably be our friend Jeff.
Yeah, that's it. He's the only one that wants to like hang out with us.
Although
ever.
He did inform me that I'm dead to him because I didn't like The Runaways. And I would like to point out that you also didn't like The Runaways.
Well, my review on Rotten Tomatoes was rotten, yes.
Yes.
Anyway, you can go to iTunes, you can download us, review us on iTunes. We always love reading those on air. I'm going to check at some point in this show. So, you know, if you're out there and your spider sense just tingled because we pre-record, you should
then
go
you probably
review.
Watched The Runaways a little too many times.
Yeah, very
You should
quickly.
Feel ashamed of yourself
yes.
for those thoughts about Dakota Fanning.
Anyway, you can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735. You can get us on Facebook. Search "Put Fat Guys in the Movie," Fat Guys at the Movies, or whatever this show is called, into the Facebook search, and we come right up. And you can get us on Twitter. Twitter.com/rejects is for yours truly, and Twitter.com/KevinCarr with two R's is for Kevin Carr with two R's.
Yeah, the better looking one in the room. Anyways,
should
we move ahead and start talking about the first movie?
I suppose we should at some point, yeah.
Death at a Funeral. It's a remake of a 2007 foreign film about a family dealing with the death of their patriarch and all the shenanigans that happened at the funeral.
I'm so sorry to hear about your dad.
Were you guys friends?
Something like that.
You telling me our father was on the down low?
Way down. Now the guy wants $30,000 or he's going to start showing pictures of them doing stuff.
No, I don't believe that. Oh, daddy.
Let me get this straight. Our father was romantically involved with a guy that could fit in his pocket. And you're mad because he's white?
First off, I want to give you first crack because I have an interesting take on this movie. So,
okay. No. Have you never seen the original?
No, I think I saw it with you.
Oh,
I saw
fair
the,
enough.
Yeah,
I really like the original, which is a British film. Which is yes. clearly why we said foreign language, because...
Well, no, it's a foreign film. It's not a foreign language.
No, I said foreign language, because British is foreign
language.
They have accents.
They have accents.
Ye olde English is...
Yes.
Anyway, so I really, really enjoyed the original. It was directed by Frank Oz, and it has...
That's Grover and Yoda, for people who don't know.
It has so much... There's so much dark humor to it. There's so much subtlety and brilliance to it. And Alan Tudyk is amazing.
Yeah.
So when I heard about the fact that they were remaking it, I said, there's just no way. You know, there's just no way that you can do anything new with it. Yeah. And what I found most interesting about the remake is that they didn't try and do anything new with it. What they did was they just culturally shifted it, and they made it for an African-American audience. And it's, you know, Chris Rock, Martin Lawrence. And it essentially, the only thing that's different...
And every other black comedian who works...
Yeah, and anyone who is hot right now as a black actor is in this movie. Zoe Saldana.
Including Zoe Saldana.
Columbus Short.
She's just hot no matter
Luke
what.
Luke Wilson. You know...
Luke Wilson is not a hot black actor today. I'm sorry. I will take issue with that.
But what they did, and I think this is probably... You have to give them credit, is they stuck with it.
Yeah.
And the only changes are some of like the cultural jokes, which are, I mean, clearly the one in the trailer is where Chris Rock says to Martin Lawrence, he's like our father was having a gay relationship with a man he could fit in his pocket, and you're mad because he's white. They couldn't do that in the first movie.
They could have. It would have made no sense.
It would have made no sense though. And I think they kept all the pieces together, and everyone delivers a pretty solid performance. James Marsden is absolutely hysterical in the Alan Tudyk role from the original. And I think, really on a base level, if you never saw the first one, which I have a feeling a lot of people never saw it, this one's going to be funny to
film.
You.
Oh, yeah.
Because the story still works. But if you saw the first one, you're not going to really get anything new out of this new one, because it's not anything new. And I think it actually works because it's not anything new.
Well, and here's the thing. I've never been a big fan of just remaking something to remake it.
Yeah.
And when I first heard that they were going to remake Death at the Funeral, I'm like, this is just stupid, because it's already it's not like it's a Japanese movie or something like that.
Right.
It's you can go get it in the video store, you can watch it, understand it. It's not even like steeped in British culture. It's just a human story and completely ridiculous. And then I saw this, and plus there are certain, like, well, I think Chris Rock's hilarious, Martin Lawrence is okay, and I really like Zoe Saldana. I think Kevin Hart is hilarious, although he only has a very small part in this. Danny Glover's good. Keith David's good. I like some of the actors. I love Peter Dinklage, who reprises his role from the original.
Which
He's
I thought
fantastic.
Is such a wonderful touch.
He is awesome. And then... and James Marsden was probably the perfect person to put in the Alan Tudyk role. Both of them steal the show because they have the most outrageous roles.
Right.
Dinklage and Marsden. I was like, this is totally stupid. Why are they remaking it? But I went and saw it, and I go, you know what? This is funny. And in spite of my own hatred for Tracy Morgan, I even thought his scenes were funny. I have to say, I was sucked into the movie in just its raw silliness and a drive. It has an energy, and it keeps that energy up, and that is very hard to do with a 2-hour movie, but boy, they do it in this one. And I was not looking forward to it. It's one of those films that I was like, this is gonna suck, and then I went and saw it, and I'm like, you know what, this is a funny movie, and it's a movie, go see it with an audience, because the louder the audience is and the more they laugh, the more fun you're gonna have, because it has some great moments, even if you know they're coming.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's one of those movies that people who are, and anybody who I've talked to has seen it, if they really like the original, they're not going to like this one. If they've never seen the original, they're going to like this one. It's that simple. So I say it kind of rocks. I say it's worth going to see, especially if you haven't seen the original.
I say it totally rocks. I think whether you've seen the original or not, go see it, because I think it's funny and it's well made.
Fair enough. When we come back, kick ass. And we're back here on Fat Guys in the Movies, and surprisingly, Death at a Funeral gets an overwhelmingly positive review from us.
Yeah, surprise, surprise, we agree.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's pretty simple, I guess. Moving on to...
what else can we say about Death at a Funeral, but we like
it. Yeah, exactly. To a movie that, I guess, going into it, we probably expected it to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that's gotten a lot of buzz, especially in the last couple of days.
Yes.
Which is Kick-Ass. It involves real-life high school superheroes and an 11-year-old girl who kills a lot of people. It's excellent.
How come nobody's ever tried to be a superhero?
If anybody did it in real life, they'd get their ass kicked.
I was just a regular guy.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hey, my only superpower was being invisible to girls.
The comic books had it wrong. You don't need a power to be a superhero.
Leave him alone! It's none of your business!
Yes, it is.
Hey, there's a dude dressed like a superhero out there fighting a bunch of guys.
Who are you? I'm Kick-Ass.
I was not completely sold on this movie before I saw it, partly because there was so much buzz. And I always get leery of too much buzz because I've gotten sucked into it where people are like, oh, this is a great movie. It's so awesome. I'll give you a great example of a movie that got a lot of buzz and a lot of fanboy support and a lot of people wanting to see it and can't wait for it to come out was Fanboys. And then you saw it and you're like, well, it was okay.
Yeah.
But it was hardly awesome.
Yeah.
And so I was just sort of trying to distance myself from the buzz before I saw that.
Yeah. Well, I think I was on concept, I was excited for this movie. It's kind of a cool concept.
Did you read the book?
Little bits and pieces.
You read page 37 and then the ending?
Yeah. No. There's like six books or whatever. Okay. And I read the first one.
And your time commitment just is...
It's just, you know. Anyways, but it really kind of started with me getting excited for it after Butnumathon in December here in Austin.
And did you go to that?
No, I didn't. But a bunch of people that I know went, saw Kick-Ass, said it was just amazing. And then I saw it at South by Southwest. And it really, it does live up to it. I mean, it's a vulgar movie. It is an irreverent movie. It's a violent movie. It very much throws buckets of paint at decency. Okay. And I think that for me, especially being an immature person like I am, it was an awesome experience. Pride
in. You were taking great pride in your immaturity.
Well, and I think that's really the target audience is kind of that immature crowd who loves wanton violence for the sake of having wanton violence, and it's really
basically the entire staff of Film School Rejects is what.
Most of us, I think, but I think it's one of those things where if you're familiar with Mark Millar and his stuff, especially Wanted coming out, it's this very kind of in your face violence that is like, it's essentially him sitting down, putting all of this on screen or in his comics, and saying, "Deal with it," you know. And in this one, you've got a lot to deal with. You can either enjoy it or be completely turned off by it. You've got, you know, the 11-year-old girl, Hit Girl, played by Chloe Moretz, who is, you know, she's got some choice words for people. Mm-hmm. She's killing people with knives, swords, guns, wit, and...
I don't think she kills anybody with her wit. I don't think she gives a snappy one-liner and the person's head explodes.
But close enough.
I challenge.
But you know, and I think it's her performance is excellent. She's got tons of energy, and it really makes the character a lot more fun than it probably was on paper.
Yeah.
So you know, and the rest of the movie is pretty simple. You know, it's about costume characters trying to take down a drug. The story overall is very paint
by
numbers.
There's not a whole lot of complexity to the story.
Yeah, but I mean, it just goes places that you don't expect the average movie to go. But I mean. You know, it's not for everybody, I think. I think that's the thing about... it totally rocks for me.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, as we'll probably talk about here in a minute, it's not a movie that everyone's going to enjoy, especially parents. You know, it's not really a kid's movie.
No, not exactly. That's the dangerous part. It's not at all a kid's movie. That's the thing. It's, well, here's the thing. I liked it. I did enjoy it. And the parts I thought were most enjoyable were the kick-ass scenes, where they're the big fighting and the mayhem and the violence. That's a blast. And you have to get into sort of the fun violence. You cannot get stuffy and be like, oh, this is desensitizing people to violence. Well, you know, we've had that argument for decades. You know, just shut up with that argument, because... These kind of movies are not what's causing urban violence. It's other things that are causing urban violence, and you know, this is not the cause of bad things happening in society. So if you don't want to see this, if you don't want to see that, fine, stay away from it. But if you think it's fun and goofy and silly, and it's like, wow, isn't it kind of neat to see this, you know, 11-year-old girl slicing guys' legs off? Yeah, go see it. It's funny. It's not meant to be taken seriously. So I did enjoy it for that. And I thought the look of the film is fantastic. It has this real saturated color look to it, which which really gives it a comic book feel. And the only thing I didn't like about the movie, I have to be honest, is it is sort of introspective to the comic book community. It's introspective to comic books in general. And I think it shows its hand and goes a little overboard with, there's a romance between the main character, the guy who plays Kick-Ass, and his, and this girl at school who likes him, which is such a male fantasy that it puts the male fantasy of a comic book to shame. And I'm just like, it just got silly at some, where I'm just like, yeah, I could deal without this. Cause this is just, at this point, it's just now becoming, gratuitous, and that's the part that's what I thought was too gratuitous. I'm just like, nah, it's just stupid. But like the whole thing with the costume crime fighters and really trying to do their thing and sort of busting on it in sort of the same kind of irreverence that Mystery Men busted on real kind of costume crime fighters were real. So I thought that was really cool. Also, I thought Nicolas Cage did a fantastic job in it. I mean,
oh yeah. There's so many fun performances in this movie.
Well, he does a spot-on Adam West impression as Big Daddy, which had me laughing every time he opened his mouth. And I'm not a definite Nick Cage fan. I mean, he can do wrong a lot, and he's done it.
Yeah.
But he does a great job in this movie, and it's now we'll talk a little bit about. So I do say it rocks for me. It rocks. It's definitely
check it out. I say it rocks. I say, you know, get a bunch of your drinking buddies together and go see it. It's kind of a blast.
But this goes to a greater issue. It's like I remember this sort of issue came about in the early 90s, mid to early 90s when, and this is back when The Simpsons was considered edgy, where Simpsons isn't necessarily a kid's show. It's a cartoon. It's not a kid's show. Right. And then you had South Park coming on and idiot parents would be like, oh, it's animated, there, ergo we can show it to kids. No, you don't show South Park to kids. It's not something you show to kids at all. You don't show Family Guy to kids or American Dad. There's a lot of stuff children should just plain not be watching, and don't be an idiot parent and think, oh, because it's animated, you should take a kid to it. Same thing with this one. We've had enough really awesome superhero movies. Look at the damn rating, people. If it's rated R, don't take your kids to it. If it's rated PG or PG-13, look at what it's rated PG-13 for. Make a decision as a parent. Nobody should be taking a six-year-old to see Kick-Ass at all. It's not appropriate.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, it is an R-rated movie.
Exactly. I think that's the one.
You know, and that might be, you know.
And I think it's arrogant because there was a review by Roger Ebert who basically made that point. He says, well, this is desensitizing violence, and I'm not worried. He literally says, I'm not worried about 16-year-olds seeing this. I'm worrying about 6-year-olds. 6-year-olds shouldn't be seeing a movie. Don't be an idiot parent and think, oh, just because there's a costume superhero in it, it's appropriate for a child.
I think that's why the rest of us weren't worried about the 6-year-olds.
Exactly.
Because we remembered that this is an R-rated film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're going to review A Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not worried about 8-year-olds seeing A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Well, and it's like last year I ran into this with Watchmen, which is right around the same time release. And I literally would go on the radio and do an interview with somebody, and this was not an isolated incident. It happened more than once. It happened 3 or 4 times where somebody says, is this kind of like The Incredibles, where it's a family of superheroes? I'm like, no, it's nothing like The Incredibles. The Incredibles does not have an almost rape scene in it. The Incredibles does not have
a slow motion sex scene in it.
Yeah, and the Incredibles does not have people
really
exploding into their
the
very. Oh, it would have been an interesting movie for sure. My whole point is that superhero movies in the 2000s in the new century have evolved to such a level that it's not just big budget one shot movies for kids. It's diversified into some very interesting things. And just because you put a costume on a superhero does not mean it's automatically you have an obligation to make it a kid's movie.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and I think for better or for worse, a lot of comic book movies now, you know, they're not all shooting for the general audience.
Iron Man's cool. It's a 4-quadrant movie. Everyone's going to see it. It's going to make $300 to $400 million this summer. Great. But that's
right. I think Kick-Ass, you know, at best they could expect it to be a $100 million movie.
I think that would be a wet dream for
Kick-Ass. No. I mean, at best, that's where the niche appeal taps out. So, But we're going to talk about that in the next segment when we talk about
when we come back. Yeah, we'll talk about how well we think it's going to do.
For sure. We'll be right back.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the notorious Middlesex.
Is it really notorious, though?
It's notorious because it's not on the radio.
Oh, fair enough.
And we can say naughty words.
Can we say all the words that Chloe Moretz says in Kick-Ass?
We can say cunts. Yes. I was just going to say bitches. I read an interview or a little excerpt interview, and it was on Wikipedia, so it's got to be true.
Yeah.
But it was a thing where she was talking about, because a lot of people ask her, like, how do you say these lines? And she's like, oh, if I said these at home, I would be, like, grounded for the rest of my life.
There have been, several interviews. I read one from the New York Times that was an interview with her and her brother, her older brother, who I think is in his mid-20s, is her acting coach slash, like, person who watches out for her.
Slash, like, Lee Chu's.
Yeah.
He's investing his money. Investing her money.
I met him during South By, because I was sitting there. I have a funny Chloe Moretz story. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready. I'm prepared.
I was sitting there working at a hotel, at the Four Seasons Hotel here in Austin during
and
South
by working you mean working the bar and
no I was
that
I was writing stuff I was
upstairs.
Like in a corner oh. table by an outlet so I can plug in my computer and I hear
like
people talking behind me and I'm writing and whatever and I turn around and like Chloe Moretz is just like right there
she's like cunts
right
bitches,
over my
whatever.
Shoulder it was the day after Kick-Ass premiered and you know her whole family was with her and everything and she was just the average kid. And I think it's interesting that they've done all these interviews with her mother and her brother, and they've talked about how, you know, she really does have an understanding of the difference between what should be said in real life and what was said in the movie. You know, I mean, it's a testament to her just being a smart kid, knowing that,
well,
you know.
There is also the thing that kids aren't stupid. They know the difference between make-believe and real
absolutely.
Life. I mean, I show my kids. I was telling you off the air. I showed my kids clips from one of the Freddy Jason movies, and yeah, it's got people getting killed with machetes. But I mean, my kids are the most non-violent kids you'll ever meet. They're not offset because they understand it's a movie and it's silly and it's goofy and it's crazy. And it's like my dad would read DC horror comics as a kid, where people are getting dismembered and shot in the face and eaten by zombies. So
yeah,
you know, it's the same kind of deal. Kids aren't stupid.
Absolutely. So, you know,
unless they are.
It's just one of those things. I don't think it ever confuses Chloe Moretz.
No.
The fact that she said the word, you know, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You know.
If she were to come home and say that, she'd get smacked in the face by her parents.
Well, I don't know about in the face. She's an actress. They need that face, but
that's right, smack her in the side and she's not doing bikini shots yet.
But wow. You know,
I can't believe I just went there.
Yeah, seriously, giving some tips to Chloe Moretz's mom on how to beat her kid.
Yeah, when she's like 16 and she's sort of like doing the Miley Cyrus sexy photo shoot, you can't punch her in the ribs anymore. Just the rules. Those are the rules.
Anyway, moving on to the box office from last week. Oh no, do we want to do a question first? We have a question.
Do we want to do we have a voicemail from Meryl.
Or we could roll through the box office and then do Meryl's question.
Let's get Meryl out of the way first.
Oh, fair enough. I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, he gets enough spotlight. Although he did say, you'll notice in this voicemail, he does say, you know, he since Thomas from Seattle has called in a couple times, he is now stopping doing his weekly call-in. But the threat is, sort of the way Al-Qaeda works, if nobody responds in the next couple weeks, he'll start calling in again. So.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. But anyways, here's his voicemail.
Hey, guys. Meryl back as usual. And since you're talking about Kick-Ass this week, I have a question for you. Recent news has popped up that Joss Whedon might be directing the upcoming Avengers film. Personally, I don't like this idea. I'd rather see Leterrier, Favreau, or Johnston take this on, since those three have experience with at least one of the superheroes being adapted into that property. I would be more than happy to see Joss Whedon take on another character from the Marvel or DC from the Marvel universe, or maybe he jumps over the DC universe. But beyond that, so first of all, would you want to see Joss Whedon direct Avengers? And two, what directors would you want to see direct a comic book movie? By the way, since people have started to call in again, this will be my last voicemail until people stop calling in again. So glad to see it worked. Later.
So, what are your thoughts on the Avengers? Joss Whedon.
On Joss Whedon's Avengers? I think it's an interesting choice. I think Joss Whedon is certainly...
Is saying that it's an interesting choice like saying your date has a good personality?
He's certainly... I mean, he's a capable storyteller. And I think he's shown himself, especially with Firefly, to be someone who can handle more than one... a strong ensemble of characters, which is going to be important for the Avengers. You know, where I would worry about Joss Whedon is the action. Avengers is going to have to be kind of a huge action piece. And
well, the other reason, part of the reason it needs to be a huge action piece is you've got the origins of Captain America, you've got the origin of Iron Man, you've got the origin of the Hulk, you've got everybody. You don't have to do an origin story.
Right, right. So it's going to be, you know, it's kind of an interesting, but then again, I liked Serenity a lot, and I thought that that did a good job of picking up where Firefly kind of left off and just taking those characters and running with them. And I think that's going to be a very similar formula. And I don't think Marvel's going to let anyone screw up the Avengers, you know?
Okay.
So I think it's really, you can't look at, like, this is Joss Whedon's movie as much as Joss Whedon is pairing up with Jon Favreau, who's a producer on the project. So, like, it's really kind of a team thing at this point. It's going to be a team-made film as much as it is a team film. I'm not too worried about it. And I think it's great that he's coming on the whole him writing thing. He's going to be doing some punch up work on Captain America, which that makes me feel so much better about Captain America because it looks like it was going down the toilet for a while. And he's going to be rewriting the Avengers. He's a very talented writer. So
let me rebut a couple things that you said. First of all, as a writer, he's good. As a writer who gets his stuff directed by other people, I think Joss Whedon's very good.
Mm-hmm.
He has a versatile writing style that people can pick up. I mean, he's proved that in certain, well, with the exception of Alien Resurrection. We'll just leave that on its own. But he has proved that to other people, sort of the way David Goyer is. David Goyer is a brilliant writer. The guy freaking wrote The Dark Knight. He wrote Dark City. Yet he directed The Invisible and The Unborn. So this guy, there is a huge disconnect in what he writes that other people then
Well, I think the difference...
And what he writes in
the direct.
Well, let me finish.
Yeah.
I also want to bring up one other thing. I don't see Joss Whedon in the director's chair as a team player. He's very much... It's his story. It's sort of like Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith does his best in a movie that's completely his, as was proved by Cop Out, which was awkward at best. And I don't see Joss Whedon, you know, if you give him total control and you let him do Buffy the way he wants to and you put it on a small network that does not need 20 million viewers for every episode, he can thrive. And he can get that solid fan base. But I don't think his fan base is as large as the fan base wants you to believe. I just don't think Joss Whedon has that pull. That's just my thought.
I don't know if he has a choice. It feels like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, Marvel as a studio... is probably the most constrictive studio. I think Jon Favreau was lucky that he was, like, first one out because he probably got to do a lot of what he wanted to do. But
he also, I think, helped define that. Before that, you had Marvel Studios was doing, like, the first Hulk movie, which did well.
Well, even then, it wasn't Marvel. I mean, this Iron Man was the first of
Was the first honest-to-God Marvel
studio. Yeah, everything else kind of, like... Various producers have various rights and various studios on various rights. And really, I think, you know, now it seems, especially with the Captain America contract disputes where it was like they're only going to – whoever signs on to Captain America is going to get paid crap pay. And they have
I'll
to
sign
on.
I'm sure that the crap pay is brutal.
You know, and
it's more than you and I make combined.
And they're a very controlling studio. So I don't think Kevin Feige, who's the head of Marvel Studios, and Jon Favreau, who is going to be producing the Avengers, I don't think it's going to be Joss Whedon's movie completely. And I think that's
well,
probably.
But I'm saying that I think you're going to start seeing problems in.
Well,
production
and I think you know, if I were Joss Whedon, and my career were going the way it's going, I mean, let's face it, Joss Whedon. Is a very talented individual, but he's made a couple real, commercial failures.
He's made name one film or television project that's considered a success since Buffy, the Buffy series, Buffy Angel.
Right, exactly. Serenity was loved by fans, but it made $25 million at the box office.
Didn't do well. Firefly got canceled.
Dollhouse got canceled after two seasons. Cabin in the Woods got delayed because it wanted to go 3D. That's not going to make a ton of money. This is Joss Whedon's chance to make something really, really big. So I think, you know, if I were him, I would make the concession. I'd make some creative concessions.
I just don't think he has it in him. Watch some behind the scenes of Joss Whedon. It's all about him. And I'm a notorious anti-Joss Whedon guy. Mm. I don't wish him ill will, but I just first of all, his stuff's not mainstream enough. He's like, you know what it's like? He's like Star Trek. Star Trek, everybody, I don't care who you are, is aware that Star Trek exists.
Right.
Even before last summer. So where Star Trek exists, but not everybody watched it. You had this diehard fan base, and the movies could do okay, but it needed to be brought into the mainstream, which is what J.J. Abrams did. And I think, Joss Whedon is a Conan O'Brien of science fiction movies. I think Conan O'Brien going to TBS, for example, is a great, brilliant move because he doesn't need to capture the Tonight Show size audience.
Right.
He can just get a niche audience and be wildly popular with that niche audience and be incredibly successful. And I think Joss Whedon's the same way, which is why Buffy's thrived and Firefly and Dollhouse failed.
Yeah. Well, here's a secondary question to this whole discussion, yes, which is the Avengers going to be a mainstream movie? And I wonder.
Well, they're going to waste money on it.
Well, I know. It would have to be in order to be successful, as much as money as they're going to end up paying these people to make this movie. The problem is we're so far away from it.
Yeah.
You have two projects that kind of it hinges on, which is Thor and Captain America. I think Thor is going to be potentially a really good movie with very limited appeal to the mainstream because it's
I think both. I think Thor and Captain America will do well, partly because both Brana and Joe Johnston. Both of them, they will make mainstream movies if they have to.
Right. The question is, you know, is the Avengers the kind of movie that it's not exactly Iron Man? You know, Iron Man's a very simple sell.
Yeah.
You know, the Avengers is a little bit more, and I think it's just going to be interesting to me whether or not by the time we get to the Avengers, will they have built enough momentum for it to be as successful as it will need to be?
It could be good or bad. It could be good like the X-Men movies, or it could be bad. And I said this, actually, somebody asked me a Forum Spring question on this, and I said, if you do it right, it could be like the X-Men movies. If you do it wrong, it could be like last year's Fame with superheroes. That nobody gets a story, nobody cares about the movie.
Yeah. I think all of the best parts of Joss Whedon will come out with the Avengers.
Okay.
I don't think Marvel's going to let him become a diva and ruin it because they are so in control of their movies.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there's a chance.
Well, I mean, sure, there's
that
a chance.
He will diva out and you might get a new director. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Well,
or
you never know.
Or he'll be the Kevin Smith on Cop Out. I'm a hired gun and I'm just doing what they tell me to.
Right. I don't think so. Cause I really think that he's, I think he's done some writing for Marvel, hasn't he?
He's done comic books.
Yeah,
sure.
He's
done
some comic books.
So is Kevin Smith, but I don't think I think it'd be a bad idea.
It feels like
Kevin
it's one
Smith
of those things, and I like the fact that he's coming in and he's also doing a draft of the script. That was Kevin Smith's problem
writer
on Cop Out, is that he didn't rewrite the crap script that he was working with.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if Joss Whedon gets a chance to kind of form some of these characters and whatnot, I think he could make a good movie out of it. We'll see. I mean, if Captain America and Thor are terrible, there's no hope for the Avengers.
Well, they're not going to do it. I mean, I think under the two people they've got...
I worry about Captain America, but I'm not so worried about Thor.
Jumanji, Jurassic Park 3, that's totally mainstream shit that he does.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
And we've totally wasted all this time on Meryl's question. Good job, Meryl. Thank you.
Seriously, we wasted a whole segment on this crap.
What's going on? Let's talk real quickly about the box office. Last week, it was an interesting week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting week because on Sunday, Date Night was claiming victory.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that they weren't even anywhere close to victory. I mean, they were still... It was close. I mean, they were all in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still like 1.5 million away, which is not a squeaker finish.
Right. And it lost again to Clash of Titans. How to Train Your Dragon, Tyler Perry's movie, and the last song finished out the top five. Which, Date Night was the only one that had a chance anyway. So,
yeah.
A second place finish isn't too bad for that movie.
Not bad. I do think it was interesting, the over-reporting that Fox did.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think it was really just kind of studio jostling.
Yeah.
Where they wanted to, you know, to show.
And I think the stories got picked up because there's a lot of hate for Clash of the Titans, partly because
everyone was glad that it was.
Well, there's a lot of people who think it's an inferior. Forget the 3D. Who think it's an inferior story and an inferior remake? And then you throw the conversion 3D in it, and there's a lot of hate out there for it. So I think there's a lot of people who were eager to report that Date Night won. And I just thought that was interesting that Clash of the Titans won its second weekend.
Right.
Which, you know,
and it dropped 55%. That's pretty standard.
That's very standard for an action.
It's just, it's that close. I really don't think anyone won last weekend. They all just kind of fell in place.
But see, here's the other thing. If people are comparing, because you'll see a lot of pundits compare, this movie is like whatever. And a lot of people will compare it to Gladiator, more often 300, because it came out about the same time.
Yeah.
The difference between 300 and Clash of the Titans is 300 came. It was the only new movie. I think there was one other new movie, but it came in like number 12, and it was the only new movie, so it made 70 some million.
Mm-hmm.
Its opening weekend, which is fantastic, but there was no competition whatsoever. When Clash came out, it was up against like three other movies. Plus, it had the carryover from the previous week of How to Train Your Dragon, so there was a lot of competition in the marketplace for it. And again, this week as well, you had Date Night, and it hit all these different demographics. So, it's a very different weekend because right now, this last 2 weeks, there's a variety of choices. You have your kids, you like your tween movie with Last Song. You got your urban comedy with Tyler Perry. You've got your action movie. You've got your kids movie. You've got your date movie. They're all different. This weekend, I think, is more interesting because you got two R-rated movies that are arguably going for similar audiences.
Between Kick-Ass and Death of Fury.
Well, they're both R-rated
movies. And I think Kick-Ass is going to win the weekend. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I feel like it's a marketing thing. At this point, it is marketing that is going to drive Kick-Ass. I mean, there's a core audience there, clearly. I think it's got a built-in $10 to $15 million audience for the opening weekend. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I feel like the marketing has been very strong.
Okay.
The television market. Every time I turn on the Sci-Fi Channel or G4 or ESPN, there's a Kick-Ass commercial. So I think they're marketing well to the $10 to $15 million demographic that I'm talking about is the like comic book people, the internet people.
Sure.
You know, but they're also advertising outward to the general 18 to 35 male demographic, and I think that's where you're going to win. And I think I really think Kick-Ass is going to be high 20s, and it's going to win. Death at a Funeral is also going to do well. I think they're going to go 1-2 because Death at a Funeral is that urban African American
audience. I totally think Death at a Funeral. I think is going to 25 to 30 million easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to clean up, and the reason for it is because it has everybody in the movie. Something. I mean, it's everybody but Tyler Perry, who's notable in black film, is in this movie. I mean, it is everybody, and it's a funny movie. And it plays to its demographic. It plays to its audience. It plays outside of its demographic. I think Death and Funeral kind of hits everything it needs to. The thing that I think is going to harm Kick-Ass is it is such a passionately loved movie by the internet generation, the internet crowd.
I mean, you have a loud minority.
Yeah, but I just don't think it's going to transfer to your average person. I think there's a lot of people are going to wait to see, but there's going to be a word of mouth of like, wow, this is really violent. You got an 11-year-old girl killing people. I think that's going to harm it. And that doesn't mean that they should have changed it. I'm just saying that this is not a mainstream movie. And
I don't think it's a mainstream movie, but I think it is. I think it's potentially a $30 million movie on opening weekend.
I think 30, honestly.
It's a little strong, but it's good.
I think it's going to do grindhouse numbers. That's
so
what
you
think
25 million.
I think 30 million tops, 30 to 35 million.
Full run.
Ending domestic box office.
Okay.
Complete.
All right, well, we'll see. I really think...
That's not a reflection of the quality of the movie.
Yeah, no, and like I said, I think it really comes down to marketing. I think that Kick-Ass is being extremely well marketed, and people are talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people, I think, are going to go see it out of curiosity.
I think it's going to win Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It will totally win Friday. And I think it's going to have a high rate of attrition because it's going to be one of those movies that people are going to go see And the people who want to see it are going to go see it Friday, Saturday, and then they've seen it. It's not going to be like, I mean, not like Twilight where literally you'll have teenage girls going and seeing five shows a day.
Right.
You know, it's going to be, people are going to go see it once.
I think it'll do, you know, moderate numbers.
I'd love to see it do well. I liked the movie. Yeah. I think it's going to be like Grindhouse. And somebody, I said that to somebody, and they're like, "Well, wait, Grindhouse had the time crunch." I'm like, "Really? Seriously? We had a 2-hour and 40 million movie make $750 million."
Right.
I don't think time has anything.
Well, I don't think
Grindhouse
was worth that time, whereas Avatar was. So I think Kick-Ass. That's another. I mean, it's short. You know, yeah. So a 90-something minute movie. I think it'll work.
No, yeah. I'll be curious to see. I'm very curious to see what the numbers are, but I honestly think Death at a Funeral is going to win the weekend.
Yeah.
So. Well, speaking of Death at a Funeral, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5, because they've taken Death and Funerals and made them funny in this movie.
they did it in 2007. They're just doing it again here.
Well, the Brits did it, but it's such a small little country. anyways, we have... everybody's doing... you know, lists about superheroes and that's like, and screw that. Let's do one about Death at a Funeral because nobody's doing lists about that. And these are five hilarious movie deaths.
Right.
And I'm going to do the first couple, the first two,
I'll take
because
the
they're kind
one.
Of mine. You want to do the next? Okay, that's cool. Well, the first one is Brad Pitt and Meet Joe Black.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and find clips and put these on Fat Guys in the Movies because they're great. They're great scene. And a little mention as well, Amanda Detmer in Final Destination. These are bus crash deaths, and pretty much any movie that involves somebody getting hit by a bus is awesome in my
opinion. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Also very funny, anyone who explodes, which is our second one, which is Lizzie Kaplan in Cloverfield, who goes behind a curtain and then explodes. Also honorable mentions, and I don't want to spoil Lost, but there's an awesome one in this past week's episode of Lost, but also Arst.
Yes.
The science teacher in, I think it was season 3 or season 2?
Something like that.
I think it was 3 or... Actually, 3 or 4, where he just is carrying dynamite and randomly
the
explodes.
Rule is, when you have dynamite that's 100 years old, don't wave it around.
Don't do anything with it. Don't
it's
go near it. Don't
exciting, yeah.
Yeah. But anyone who is just explodes.
Awesome.
So.
Yes. The next one... This is yours as well. You can do this one.
Well, yeah. It's Wallace Shawn and the Princess Bride. If you're playing a game of wits... and you're trying
Sicilian.
To outwit someone who's clearly smarter than you, and you are going to go drink, you know, the drink that has the poison, that supposedly doesn't have the poison in it, you just pay attention to what cup you're drinking out of.
Yes,
because he dies pretty heinously.
And the other one, I'll let you do this one as well.
Sure,
this
I'll do them all. I'll do them all. I don't care.
I'll do the last one.
All right, fine. The next one's a swordsman from the Raiders of the Lost Ark, in which the swordsman is very flashy, and the lesson learned here is don't be flashy. Because he's very flashy with his sword work, and then he just gets shot.
Exactly. Awesome scene. And then the last one is the magic trick. Do you want to see a magic trick? Let me show you how to make a pencil disappear from The Dark Knight. And I don't have any problem spoiling this at this point, because Jesus Christ, if you haven't seen The Dark Knight, get with the program.
Seriously.
Paid $550 million. Deal with it.
Right.
That's the best hilarious deaths. An honorable mention. You got another honorable mention here.
Yeah, Aunt Edna from National Lampoon's Vacation. I feel like this is the most fitting one because we're talking about what happens with people dealing with death, because Aunt Edna dies in the back seat and then they put her on top of the car.
And drive away.
And that is almost as funny as what happens in Death at a Funeral. So.
Only no gay midgets in this one.
Not that I know of.
Yes. And with that, we should probably go to break. We're way over time.
And yet, here on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've reviewed several films. We talked
at
length.
Well, we reviewed two films.
Well, several. That's two.
No, two. Several's three.
A couple.
A couple's two. Let's not lie to our audience.
We talked about vulgarity in film and how it relates to Roger Ebert being old.
Yes.
We talked about Joss Whedon, The Avengers, at length. And then we did a very funny Fat Guy 5 in segment 3. So if you're listening to us on the radio...
Don't go listen to some.
You should come online and get us over on the internet. But now, before that happens, it is time to do the world-famous...
World-famous...
Roundup. And we'll start with me, because we always start with me, because I'm clearly the man. And I have three.
That's not why we start with you.
I have three picks this week. They're all on Blu-ray and DVD. But Apollo 13 came out on Blu-ray for the first time.
Yes.
Looks fantastic.
It is the 15th anniversary of the movie.
Yes, and it was actually the 40th. This past Tuesday, which was April 13th, was the 40th anniversary of the day that the accident happened on Apollo 13.
The day that Houston, they had a problem.
Had a problem, yes. It's fantastic, one of my all-time favorite movies. Mm. So, very easy recommendation.
Right up there with Nell.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Actually, I really do like Nell. It's an interesting film. Anyway, also two new movies that just came out. The Slammin' Salmon, which is the latest from Broken Lizard. Very funny, not quite the splash that Super Troopers was, but
well,
very funny
and
a lot of very cool like cameos.
Well, and it was also not like distributed by anybody who got a movie in the theaters.
Yeah, it was really kind of a you know, but I mean
Beer Fest was like Warner Brothers. It was a big
release. I feel like this is the chance though. I mean, this is their audience is the DVD audience. Okay. So Michael Clark Duncan's awesome in it. Yeah. And then also Pirate Radio, which was another very unfortunately limited release in theaters. It's Richard Curtis who did Love Actually. It's a movie about a bunch of very, very funny British dudes and Philip Seymour Hoffman on a boat in the 60s doing pirate rock and roll radio.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the ocean.
It is fantastic. The performances are hilarious. You know, you have Reese Ifans, you've got Reese Darby from Flight of the Conchords is in it, Nick Frost from all the Edgar Wright movies, and it's very funny, awesome soundtrack. It's really just one of those very
funny,
easily enjoyable movies about music.
Awesome.
So, those are my three.
My picks are Haunted, the complete series, which stars Matthew Fox as a guy who can see dead people, which ironically he's on Lost now with Hurley, who can see dead people, but Jack, who Matthew Fox plays, can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great series. I mean, it's interesting to note because it came out in 2002, it aired in 2002, which is sort of like right when TV was changing to a very cinematic look, you know, with like 24 and Alias and Lost was 2 years down the road. And so it's this bridge. It exists in this weird bridge time between sort of this cheesy 80s, 90s TV series and modern day television. So it's interesting in that level. If you just want to go back to cheesy 80s or 90s, you can get Dallas Season 13. Why not? You're from Texas. That should appeal to you.
Not really.
Tom and Jerry Tales.
That's how you
know
I'm not from Texas.
Tom and Jerry Tales Season 1, which actually, I will say this about the Tom and Jerry
Tales.
Who
doesn't like Tom and Jerry? I'll go beat him up right now.
Well, no, this is what's... The thing is, the old Tom and Jerry episodes, like, pre-60s, and you know, in the 60s was when... Well, up to the 70s. They had, like, Chuck Jones did some, and they had the old classic ones from the 50s, except for the Deitch series, which if you know anything about Tom and Jerry, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't. So
and it's never sort of lived up to it. And then they did this series called Tom and Jerry Tales about, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And these are really cute. They kind of go back to the flavor of the old classic Tom and Jerry's. And they don't have that that really crappy, you know, assembly line look that they kind of turned into. They go back to the classic episodes. So this is good. And also one more I got to mention. It's a movie called Ice Twisters. I will honestly come out and say I have not seen it.
Kevin, we don't review porn.
But no. No, I will say I have not seen Ice Twisters, but with a name like Ice Twisters, it has to be awesome.
Has to be worth a spot in your Netflix queue.
Why not? I mean, it's not even by The Asylum, which is a little bit disappointing.
It's no Mega Piranha. Anyway, this week's stinker is one from me. It's Defendor with Woody Harrelson, a movie that looks awesome, but is really, really tragically unfunny and really kind of sad.
Okay.
And I want to believe that they intended it to be sad, but I don't think they did.
Okay.
So I would avoid Defendor.
Okay. We'll avoid that one.
Anyway, time to wrap up our reviews. We had two this week. We had Death at a Funeral, which I said kind of rocks.
And I said totally rocks. Surprisingly, I hate myself for saying that, because it's a Tracy Morgan movie, but yeah, it rocks.
Oh, whatever.
It rocks. I'm giving him a
funny
benefit.
Tracy Morgan's funny.
He does a funny job in
the
movie.
He's just, you know,
nobody can play with poop the way he does.
Anyway, Kick-Ass, which I think I said totally rocks.
And I said it rocks. I didn't realize that there's a difference between rocks and totally rocks, but...
Well, there is in my mind. Whatever. Anyway, next week we've got The Backup Plan and The Losers, which we will both have seen.
I'll see both
unless
of
I
these.
Decide not to go see The Backup Plan, which is highly possible. And we've also got Oceans, which I don't... They're not screening Oceans here.
They're not screening it for us, but I will be taking my kids to that on Take Your Kids to Work Day next week.
Oh, wow.
And I'll take my kids to work.
That sounds riveting.
And we'll... Hey, the Disney nature stuff's really cool.
It is, actually.
It's pretty fantastic, actually.
So I'm sure the spin-off Oceans will be good. Anyway, in the meantime, get us over at FatGuysTheMovies.com. Until next week, we will see you later.
Ta-ta!